sometimes tone and reality gets in the way of a well-planned sermon. So I'm going to start in the middle. It is so important what we do together and what we have together and that we are together. It is so important in our lives as human beings that we have a place where we can tell the truth nicely to one another. A place where we can laugh, a place where we can cry, a place where we can take chances, a place where we can sometimes fail and fall down and be in a community that is loving of us as full human beings. With our faults, our failures, our weaknesses, our strengths, our humanity. One of the nice things about being a Unitarian Universalist, one of the nice things about being in any kind of community, it's the people, the sense, the experience that we are not alone in this world. We are not alone in our celebrations. We're not alone in our despairs. We're not alone on this voyage. And we're not all taking the same paths. We're not all going to the beat of the same drummer. We go in a wild and mad and sometimes maddening syncopation, stumbling from place to place. But we stumble in good company. We stumble with the experience that we have a community where we are accepted. We have a kind of community as Unitarian Universalists that does not demand of us a particular theology. It doesn't demand that we reject a particular theology. There are no prescribed or proscribed views of God, divinity, your religious traditions that your people may have come from, if, for example, you may not have been a third generation Unitarian or Universalist. Elliot Richardson said that what he loved about being a Unitarian, and Elliot Richardson, for those of you who are very, very young, was a Republican member of the Nixon cabinet. He was kind of the utility infielder. He had about five or six different positions in the Nixon cabinet. He said what he really liked about being a Unitarian was that it didn't interfere with either his politics or his religion. And it's true. We do not understand religion within the narrow confines of a creedal confession. We understand religion as what we do in the world. And we have many symbols, as Judy's reading indicated, many sources to motivate us. And we don't run this negative campaign against the brand X's out there. They're fine. It's wonderful for people who are Christian, who are Jewish, who are Buddhist, who are Muslim, people who find a way that gives them the music and the poetry and the metaphors that nourishes their souls in order that they might engage the world and practice their religion. Our symbols are only there to help us remember to practice our faith in humanity, in each other, in the importance of this world. Rituals do not replace religion. Rituals are not the tail that should wag the dog. Lighting the chalice does not make us see the light. It reminds us of the light and to look for it. Whatever somebody does in a sermon is not a replacement. Whatever somebody does in a ritual and offering is not a replacement for our responsibility to live out our faiths. You can be a good Unitarian Universalist and have radically different theologies and even political registrations. You can be a wonderful religious human being from any denomination. What we recognize and what we value, what we hold up as worthy of being our goal as human beings, is tolerance of the different symbols, of the different ways that people find the strength and the goodness within themselves and in this world, in this life, in order to make a difference. Because ultimately, one of the good reasons for being a Unitarian Universalism is not what we believe, but that we have a religious system that believes in us, that believes that our lives can have meaning, that the actions that we take, the troubles that we go through, are worth it because we can make a difference to each other. And in making a difference to each other, we give each other the strength to engage a larger world. Last week I talked against the idea of grandiosity. I can't feed everybody, and the number of people I feed just isn't enough. Well, it may be true that I can't feed everybody and that it isn't enough, but it counts. As a smile counts, as holding another human being's vulnerability in our hand counts. I think, as Unitarian Universalists, along with almost every other faith, we are engaged, or should be engaged, in an arms race, in a race to get our arms around each other, in a race to get our arms around the hungry and the hurting and the homeless, to get our arms around each other, to give each other the strength for the times that when we are weak, we need the strength from others. And there are times for each of us, for all of us, when we feel weak. There are times when you want to just turn off the television and not hear the people shouting at each other. There are times when you want to just walk away from a world that has seemingly gone mad, and I don't know why I put seemingly in there, but that impulse is understandable. You can't stay fully engaged all of the time. There are times when, in anger or despair, we turn away to protect ourselves, and that's okay. But it's also nice that there to know that we are in a community where people will reach down and help us up when we're ready to be helped up. And sometimes that has to be at our own pace. And we try to be sensitive to one another, even if in the next room they aren't. Jim, would you mind asking them to chill out a little bit? Well, you use your own words. We have an effect one upon another. We live in a world with each other, and our job is to learn to tell each other the truth nicely. And maybe chill wasn't the right word. But that's human, too. We have a remarkable community. As all of you know, that I've been going through a very wild roller coaster with the death of my mother, and I want to tell you how much your cards and letters counted. I mean, every once in a while, even clergy have to be reminded that when we call on each other and just say, I'm sorry, or I'm thinking of you, just send a card that says, I'm thinking of you, that those pieces of contact that we have with each other, they count, they make a difference. And we have to remind each other of that. I needed to be reminded of how important we are to each other. I remember many years ago when I was in the hospital in intensive care, and it was not clear that I was going to survive, my friend who ruined the hymnal for Judy, Mark Bellatini, came to my bedside, and I was intubated and could not speak. A terrible thing to do with a clergyman, you know? Death I could deal with, but intubation was just, you know. Anyway, he held my hand for 40 minutes, and that's all that he could do. and that was more than enough. Our presence to each other is where our faith is lived out. It's interesting in the Bible that, I'll give you just a little Bible because I'm about to turn this sermon around a little bit. It's interesting that in the Bible, in Genesis, God asks a number of times, "Where are you?" which drove a lot of the early rabbinic sages crazy, because the idea that God didn't know where they were just seemed unacceptable theologically. I mean, you really, if you only had two people in the Garden of Eden and they were naked, you shouldn't need a Pentium 47 to find them if you're some kind of omniscient God. So it was decided that the "where are you" is a question that human beings should ask ourselves. And throughout Genesis particularly, the response that these human beings have is, "Here I am." When bad things happen, we can't always fix them, but we can be present to each other and with each other. There's a world out there that just doesn't seem to get fixed or stay fixed. It's like trying to model water. It just is movable and has a life of its own. But we still have to be present to the chaos, present to the fear, present to each other, and witnesses to a world that needs our attention and our hearts and our caring. We do this. We come together in many different kinds of groups, and this is one of them. As Unitarian Universalists, we have a tremendous amount of freedom to call and dismiss clergy, to pick our own hymns, to change our own hymns, to think as we wish, to speak as we wish, to exchange ideas as we wish. We are not taught from the pulpit what to think, not by the minister, not by the laity. I talk to you, I don't talk for you. And that's a tremendous amount of freedom that we have. And the price of freedom in religion is the same as the price of freedom anywhere else, and that's responsibility. Because we also don't get checks from headquarters. We send checks to headquarters. And so this is a congregationally owned congregation. Even were we to own this building, it would be owned by you, the people. Not by the board, not by the president, certainly not by the minister. This is a radical form of congregationalism, which means that we are responsible to each other for the light that we generate, for the heat that we generate, for the programs that we do, and for the strength that we give each other in order to do all kinds of things out there in the world. So now, I was asked to do a sermon on money at Canvas Time. Well, Al already did kind of the NPR part of the, "This is our pledge time now, and you're not going to hear All Things Considered until I have 57 pledges, and we're holding them hostage back there, and you're just not going to get these programs because we have matching funds coming from." So thank you, Al, for doing that part of the sermon. Sermon about money. It's interesting. I decided, 33 years into a career, it's an interesting time for a clergyman to look up the etymology of the word sermon, but I did yesterday. And it's interesting, as in most things scholarly and religious, there isn't agreement on the origin of the word sermon. One theory is that it's related to the word to swear, which is, I think, a very plausible explanation, with backbenchers saying, "Is this ever going to stop? I'm telling you, that better stop now." The other plausible etymology is from linking a series of ideas and thoughts. And I suspect that the linking series is really what it comes from, where the first sermon in the Bible, strangely enough, is the sermon that Ezra the scribe sets up a pulpit in front of the Watergate and explains the law. So it's a linkage of the law to the people. I think that a sermon, as opposed to a political speech, as opposed to adult education, is something that tries to link values to actions. And that's my route into talking about money today. We need, as human beings, all of us of every denomination, of every political persuasion, to link our values and our actions. What is it that is important in our lives? What is it that we really value? Worship comes from a Dutch word, worthship. It is those things that are of worth. And what's of worth? You know, money is kind of the last taboo. If I had a sermon title that said, the minister's view on abortion, nobody would look twice. Or the minister's view on radical politics, nobody would look twice. But we live in a society where we can talk freely about politics, we can talk freely about sex, as long as we don't use the seven deadly words. We can talk freely about all kinds of personal things, and somebody will talk about these things that you hardly know, and you think, this is way too much information. But the one thing we don't talk about straight is money. A couple of reasons for that. It's considered rude. It's much too personal. It's the root of all evil. No, love of money is the root of all evil. Money for a church, for a temple, for an ashram, for a mosque, is latent program. When we are canvassing you, we are not asking simply for that green stuff. We're asking for lights. We're asking for rent. We're asking for compensation for me. We're asking for newsletters and for the care and feeding and nurturing and nourishment of all of the programs that develop our children and that give them a sense of our values. It was so important what Liz said, and I hope you all got it. They're collecting change for change. They're asking children to give money from their very limited resources to model that it is important that our children feel connected to a world beyond their own immediate needs and gratification. Every week, we have the food basket to model to the children and to each other that we are connected to a world outside our doors. Every month, we write checks to the district and to the denomination, because even though we have unlimited desires as a congregation, and I certainly have unlimited desires to be paid, it is important that we as a congregation model to each other that we belong to a larger world. All of us as individuals have unlimited desires, and most of us limited means to meet them. So we make choices. And the choice that we ask people to make in the canvas season is a choice not simply to give money, but a choice to make your monetary actions towards this community related to how you value it. If you walked in by mistake and you think that this is a terrible place doing awful things in the community, for God's sakes, don't write a check or make a pledge. But if our existence makes a difference in your life, and a good difference, support that for yourself, but just as importantly for the next generation. Because we do not live and die alone in one tiny flash of light. What we do has consequences to the next generation. I had a congregant at my second church who wrote very big checks for that time, and I never met him. And I used to call him up every year and say, can I take you out to lunch? I mean, you're such a great supporter. And he said, no. Well, come on. Fortunately, he had never been to one of my services, so I couldn't take it personally that he wouldn't show up. He left before I got there, but he kept writing the check. And one day I asked him, why are you doing this? And he said, I was at a tough time in my life, and that congregation was there when I walked in a Sunday morning, and I needed those hugs. I needed that acceptance. I needed that strength. What we are doing is not simply for ourselves today. It isn't simply for a larger world out there today. We help create create tomorrow for numbers of people whom we cannot imagine. So as we come to this canvassing, what we ask you to do is to think about where we rank in terms of what's important in your day-to-day, week-to-week life. Where do you get nourishment? Are we equal to a movie, two movies a month? Maybe even three movies a month. I don't know. Think of it in units of movies, the way that the Center for Health Studies thinks of everything toxic in terms of McDonald's. That's the three Big Mac. Think about us in terms of movies. Think about us in terms of what we do and the difference that we make. Unitarian Universalists tend to be very jealous of other denominations because as good as we are with words, we're not clear about what Unitarian Universalism is. We don't have that good log line, that wonderful elevator speech that says it in just a word, so or just a paragraph. So we go on and on. We look at all those other denominations and say, now sure, they raise lots of money. Mormons give 10%. That's the biblical tithe. Many Christians give 10%. In Judaism, it's close to 4.5%. But they have products. They can identify what they are. In Christianity, you pay your money and you get paradise and eternity. Nothing against the music program, but that's usually pictured as an eternity of him singing and harp playing, which most Unitarian Universalists would pay 10% not to have to do. In Judaism, if you're real good, you get nothing, but what did you expect? Unitarian Universalism should be the easiest sell of any religious group because it's not based on a promise, it's not based on a theory, it's based on a reality, imperfect but a reality. We are what we do, and we're not perfect at it. We're not perfect in love, we're not perfect in tolerance, we're not perfect in support, but boy, do we try. And we hold that up as a value. We are not perfect people who have created a perfect community, but that is our goal, to get better with each other, and we know that we don't do it alone. We do it in company, in good company. And I can personally testify that for me, you have been very good company. And let's keep on this journey and on this path together.